time to show the world that top is what I strive for. Greatness is a journey I'm willing to strive for. Consistency is key and I don't take no time off.
We got talking a while ago about Shopify apps. We met on Twitter and talked two times about Shopify apps. And now finally, we managed to schedule a conversation about the opportunities you're seeing related to Shopify apps. And I honestly can't imagine any better person to speak to, because you've operated and sold a successful Shopify app yourself. And now you're operating a Shopify data business, a Shopify analytics business. So you have a lot of insights, and you sent me some notes in advance and they are absolutely incredible. And I really hope that we get through this list. But yeah, really, thanks for taking the time.
Not at all, Jakob. I think you've done some really cool stuff in this space of discovering opportunities, because it's, I don't know, there's a lot of tired advice on like find a problem and build a solution to it. I think there are kind of other ways of attacking that problem. So it'd be really interesting to dig into that a bit.
Yeah, actually, this is the first bullet point on your list, right? This is what everyone is saying. Default advice, Twitter thread, podcast, whatever, finding Shopify app ideas, search for merchant problems and build an app that solves them. Sounds of super simple and makes a lot of sense, but how do we actually pull this off, right? This is not really actionable for most people, I think.
It's hard. I mean, I think it's still good advice. Like, I mean, if you are a merchant or you're like working with a merchant and it's an obvious gap there, that's the best opportunity probably. But yeah, how do you kind of engineer that situation? It's a lot harder. And I think there are kind of like data-driven ways to do it and ways to kind of seek out opportunities rather than having to experience the problem firsthand, which is kind of not always possible.
Yeah. So I also think when you are actually operating a Shopify store yourself and then building an app for yourself, that's like the best case scenario, right? That, of course, but it might be a long, long detour if your main goal is to sell and build a Shopify app, just to start e-commerce stores and operate it, whatever, just to find an idea, might be a long detour. So let's talk about the strategies you have in mind for what else you can do if you're not having a problem you want to solve for yourself.
Yes, I mean, I think a lot of people say like the app store is super crowded and you got like 50 plus apps launching every week. I think there is a lot of noise there, but there are a lot of copycats as well, a lot of people who kind of follow what other people are doing. So like as a theme, I would say like search out the gaps and search out kind of the less trodden paths. And one of those is just by browsing the app store, you can see there are categories and subcategories on the left-hand side bar. Some of them are like crazy, crazy crowded. Pop-ups and notifications has 550 in apps. I would never dream of going in there. You're just going to kind of drown right at the bottom. But then if you look at something like translations and you see there are 27 apps, you kind of think there must be enough demand to support stuff there, and there must be a gap there. So that's a really interesting angle that I'd kind of start with right at the top.
Yeah, and you also wrote this. It works in both ways, of course. If there are many apps in a given category, that's a good sign because it means people are making money and there probably is a lot of demand. But on the other hand, of course, also a lot of competition. Whereas, some categories like accessibility only have 5 apps in there, but maybe there's a good reason because people are not willing to pay for that, right?
Yeah, definitely. So you kind of want to do some due diligence on that subcategory first, don't you? So what I would say is kind of jump into the subcategory. So if we look at translations, for example, we can see there are apps in there with like over 1,000 reviews. And also on the first page, you've got apps with just a handful of reviews, less than 10. So that's kind of interesting to me because it means that if you were to build something and get to like 10 plus reviews, you've got a very good chance of kind of being very visible in that subcategory. Now, most discovery on the App Store is done by keyword search. So in terms of traffic, it's not terribly helpful to be on the first page of that subcategory, but it's kind of a good way to understand where that feature is in demand. And I mentioned reviews there as well. And reviews is something that a lot of people use as a proxy for success. to say like an app's got 2,000 reviews, it must be like making bucket loads of money, and this app's got, I don't know, 500 reviews, so it must be making less. But that's not always the best. So I think something that not a lot of folks know is that if you browse the App Store and you look at the all category, which contains every single app there, the sort order there is most relevant. And in this case, it's kind of a misnomer, because most relevant means it's closer to most popular. So the stuff right at the top has a lot of installs, good review velocity. Maybe there's some kind of revenue metric in that ranking as well. I haven't been able to verify that, but at least it's kind of validated. So what I would say as well is look at where the apps in that subcategory rank in the all category. And if they're, let's say, in the top 1,500, then that means that they've got some good traction. And if there are two or three apps with good traction in that subcategory and the rest look like they're not getting traction, that seems like a really good opportunity to attack.
Yeah, this is, I think, a perfect and actionable framework where you're just going through all these categories, subcategories, and you look for categories where there clearly are winners, so it's possible to make money. But on the other hand, there aren't already all the top spots taken, right? And this is what's interesting if you want to build an app yourself. And yeah, so regarding the ranking, because you can sort by most relevant, most installed, and newest, right, on the App Store. And you try to do some reverse engineering when it comes to most relevant, right? And the dumb features that go in there are the number of installs also, right? And the review velocity is something you meant.
Yeah,
is that right?
So, I mean, it's a little bit of a black box, obviously, kind of like the Google search algorithm. But I mean, I've built up a lot of data from crawling the App Store and just from experience. And the stuff that Shopify say publicly is that the recency of reviews makes a big boost to the ranking. That's a key ranking factor. And installs. They've also said stuff around support. So on the app listing page, you can request support, and Shopify watches that. So there are various signals there. And while we don't kind of know all of them definitively, it's a very good indicator of, yeah, let's call it success or traction if you're ranking high up there. I mean, App Store optimization is a whole different topic that I've kind of got really deep into in the last year. So I won't go too far down that rabbit hole on this call.
Yeah. But just to general, I think this is a great framework that works on almost any platform where you go from to the all category where all the apps or whatever newsletters are listed, and then you look at the ranking there, and it's almost always a great proxy for success. So this is what I did for Gumroad with GumSpy, also with NewsletterSpy, where these are good proxies for revenue or subscriber count. And of course, on the Shopify App Store, it works almost the same. And something interesting you mentioned in your list, that there might be apps that reviews are not that great of a proxy, because there are apps that silently work in the background, right? And that simply don't garner many reviews. And this is where, yeah, this trick you just described is coming in handy. So not just looking at the reviews, but also at the overall ranking.
Yeah, reviews are inferior, definitely, because I mean the fact that it might be like a utility app that just sits there and does its job quietly, and I wouldn't say no one cares, but like it doesn't garner review. They're not logging in every single day and thinking, wow, this is fantastic. It's sitting there, it's doing a great job, but most of the time it's out of the merchant's mind. And the other thing is some apps are very good at soliciting reviews and other apps aren't. So I would use caution there if you're looking at an app, because if you look at, for example, the most all apps ranked by most relevant right now, you can see quite a spread. There are apps under 1,000 reviews on the first page, and apps with over 5,000. But I would take a very, very strong bet that all apps on the first page there have very good traction. So yeah, there's not always a direct correlation between the two, reviews or traction.
Yeah. So, and coming back to the subcategories, is there any specific example of a subcategory that you find interesting using this method, where there's a big winner, but not all the top spots are taken?
Yeah, I mean, translations is an interesting one. It has some kind of technical challenges once you kind of get into the weeds of it. But still, I mean, I think it's got that interesting dynamic of a few apps taking all of the glory and then some contenders that are not doing so well. So I'd be interested to build something in the translation space if I was looking at this. Also currencies, which is, again, something that I think is going to be useful for most Shopify stores, especially as commerce gets more global and get there are only 41 apps there. Like it seems to be maybe sometimes the less sexy or the less easy to build apps. App subcategories kind of are neglected by developers. And I think currencies and translations can both fit into that pot because they look deceptively simple. But once you get into it, there are kind of lots of edge cases and making things look good and not an easy problem to attack always. And then also the one that's quite surprising to me is subscriptions. I mean, there's something else we can talk about a bit later on the call, but yeah, under sales and conversion subscriptions, there are only 17 apps. And again, like most stores are looking at how to add subscriptions to their catalog because they're just great. It's a fantastic way to increase your revenue per customer and your lifetime value if you're a retailer. And there are only 17 apps in there. And again, apps on the first page with no reviews and some apps with a few hundred. So that's a really interesting one.
That's totally crazy to me. How can that be? Yeah. Because like subscriptions are like the holy grail. This is what everyone wants if you're operating a business. It's so much better than one-time purchases. And is it because Shopify start just added new features that enable subscriptions? Or do you have any idea why this category is not that popular?
Yeah, that's mostly it. I mean, it's the history of subscriptions is interesting on Shopify because for a long time, there have been two apps which have kind of hacked around the limitation of the Shopify platform where you couldn't have a subscription product. So they replaced the Shopify checkout with their own checkout, living in kind of a gray area in terms of the Shopify terms until last year where Shopify introduced an official API and they stipulated that everyone who has a subscription app and is replacing the checkout in that way, they need to start using this official API. So that it was a rough transition. And I do think subscriptions are a technically challenging area if you want to cover all of the use cases. So I think the combination of those two things has meant that subscriptions is at the moment pretty open. We've seen some interesting stuff there where the incumbents have had some interesting challenges come up. We've basically started from zero and have had good traction. So kind of validation of my thesis on that as well, to look for these subcategories that are under catered for.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. And it's actually like the perfect transition to the next framework that you outlined, which is changes that create opportunities, right? And this subscription post-purchase API change by Shopify, yeah, was an important change and it creates this kind of opportunity. And this is actually a general pattern that you are seeing, right?
Definitely. Yeah, it's Shopify is, compared to other platforms and like APIs I've worked on, Shopify's pretty slow and considered when they're making changes, but I have seen recently the pace to increase a bit. I mean, they're doing a massive hiring drive for engineers and yeah, various things that I mean, and they seem to be moving a bit faster and extending their platform in different ways. So whenever they come out with like a new API or they extend one of their core APIs, they change perhaps the Shopify admin interface to offer new ways for app developers to integrate. I mean, that at that point, it opens a playing field, really, a new place where app developers can go and build new and innovative solutions. As I said, at the start, most app developers just take an existing app, copy it, make it slightly better and launch it, which can work. But the apps that have really grown fast have taken advantage of this flux and this constant change of the platform and new opportunities opening up to seize them and to build on these new APIs.
Yeah, this is really a great framework that they really, really like. And you actually have ideas for how to get ahead of the curve, right? So, because this is what you want to be prepared when Shopify releases some new API endpoint, whatever, that enables a new type of app. So you can actually be the first because, yeah, first mover advantage is real. So how do you think someone interested in applying this framework can get ahead of the curve?
Yeah, so the way Shopify has been launching these things is kind of in a private beta way. They have been inviting specific app developers to take part in things like the subscriptions API, there's a translations API, there's a new storefront experience. So I would say, and I guess if you're a developer out there and you don't have any skin on the Shopify platform at the moment, it's hard to break into those groups. But I would say if you do have an app out there, you're interested in these spaces, you should be active in the Shopify Partner Slack channel, which they put announcements in to ask for people to take part in UX interviews, these closed betas that they're running. Also the town halls that Shopify run, it's kind of roughly been every couple of months where they get all partners on a call. They give glimpses of what's coming up and what they have on the roadmap. And I would encourage people who kind of see something on that roadmap and think, oh, that looks really interesting, to reach out to Shopify. I think what's interesting with Shopify is that they're still very approachable. If you reach out and you say, yeah, I heard mention of this new API on the call, I'd be quite interested in taking part for these reasons, there's a good chance that at least you'll be on the radar and they might invite you into these things. So that's kind of the super early part of the game. You've also got the part of the game where they're turning these APIs onto like wider usage. That kind of stuff is in the Shopify have a developer change log. When these things are launched, they include a note in there to say that this API now supports these methods, this new API is coming, these things are changing. Keeping on top of that and checking in from time to time, you'll probably find some interesting stuff there and you'll get your creative ideas going. And then a final one in that vein is that Shopify does some developer previews. These are often to do with like the storefront and the Shopify admin, and less the API. But you can there's an article on there in their docs about how to get access to these developer previews. And it could be stuff like there's a change that's been in works for a long time of sections everywhere, which is gonna change the themes game quite substantially. There are things like that you can get access to. And yeah, again, a new kind of bunch of opportunities open the door to you.
Yeah, that's a great trick, I think. And is there anything, and so you have access to these developer previews, I guess, and is there any example that comes to your mind where you think, oh, if I were in the business of starting a new Shopify app, this is what I would be looking at?
Yeah, I mean, the subscriptions and post-purchase upsell APIs that came out last year, I think there's still a long way to go with those. They were some of the most substantial changes to the developer, what a developer can do on the Shopify platform in a long time, unlocking the checkout. I think if I was a developer listening, I would look at what's possible with the API and look at what's in the app marketplace at the moment. There are clearly some gaps there. And then I think just interesting kind of snippets from the developer change log. I don't know if there's anything there, but there's interesting things like a legal policy API, which I wouldn't have even thought of. But then you look at kind of some apps in the App Store for like generating terms and conditions and this kind of thing. Maybe there's something there. But yeah, there are kind of a bunch of things in the change log where you can kind of go down that rabbit hole and look at what's possible with what they've unlocked. Because something else about the change log is there's always a reason for it. Shopify doesn't just put stuff out there because they think they should bolt on a bunch of features. It's very considered, as I've said. So when something comes out, there's kind of pent up demand for it. And that can sometimes be an irritation for merchants that they have to wait a long time for things. But as a developer, you kind of know if Shopify's built something out on its platform, there's already the demand there that you can tap into. Something else is that like Shopify doesn't exist in a silo. There are dependencies on other platforms and other devices. I mean, the iOS 14 stuff is really interesting in that it's changing the game for a lot of ad stuff and analytics. When something like that changes, there's going to be opportunities. There are going to be apps that break because they don't adapt to the new blocking and the new privacy regimes of browsers and platforms. And that opens up an opportunity. Is there a way to record that stuff on the server side rather than relying on client-side code, for instance? That kind of stuff's really interesting to keep a handle on, because if you're a developer that can build things efficiently and it's switched on to these changes, you're going to be able to get like the first bite of the apple, and you're going to be able to outmaneuver these kind of apps that have been around for a while and they've maybe kind of lost that spark and the interest in building new things.
Yeah, in the change log, I'm also seeing like customer privacy API now available, which seems somewhat related, right? So also Shopify is thinking about these kind of issues. Yeah. That's really interesting. And
yeah, there's lots of kind of cool stuff in there. And there's also like deprecations as well. Like, I don't know whether you know, but Kit was a pretty popular app on Shopify where it would do like Facebook marketing and stuff for you through text message. A lot of merchants loved it, but Shopify pulled the plug on it. There are also things like that where it's not big enough for Shopify to do anymore. That's the theory. Maybe a developer can come in and build something similar and fill the gap that isn't interesting for Shopify, but it could be very interesting for a developer like us.
Yeah, totally. Is there a good place to find these debris, or is it also just the changelog?
Mostly the changelog, yeah. The Kit one I've just scrolled past. The deprecations, yeah, they mostly come in there. You can also look at Shopify has a category for its own apps on the App Store, and the kind of that in itself is an opportunity, because for whatever reason, Shopify doesn't seem to be great at building Shopify apps. Judging by the reviews, their ratings don't seem to be some of the best on the App Store. Maybe it's because they have so many merchants installing them, I don't know, but I see an opportunity there as well, where you can build a better version of an app that Shopify themselves have listed in that category, because they tend to be some of the most popular categories and applicable to most merchants if Shopify has acquired or built an app themselves to cover that feature.
Yeah, so this changelog is really a gold mine. I'm fascinated. This is really cool. This is really cool. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure you can find interesting opportunities there. So another framework or idea that you mentioned earlier is that what's most important in the App Store is not actually these category rankings, but keywords, right?
Definitely. When I had apps, it was 80% plus of our app listing views came from keyword search. So if you rank high for one of the most popular keywords, then that's great. So I would say like it's in a similar vein to underserved subcategories. There are also underserved keywords. It's a lot more legwork to find them. But if you can, if you kind of build up some kind of like database crawls things, I think you can come up with some interesting niches that haven't been catered for, but merchants are searching for. So what we really want for that is to know what merchants are searching for, what the most popular keywords are. And we can do that by using the autocomplete suggestions. So when you type in a few letters in the search bar, I've typed in ORD, you get six, I think it's a maximum of six autocomplete suggestions for what you've just typed in. So I've got order printer, order tracking, order lookup, order limits, and order limit. These autocomplete suggestions are some of the most popular keywords on Shopify. There are only about 1,200 of them in total. So if you rank high for one of these, you can be sure that you've got enough search volume to support an app there. So yeah, similar to the subcategory stuff, if you can find a keyword there that has few apps, or the apps that are there are not very good, or they're only a couple are ranked highly in the all apps category and the rest don't have much traction. And that's kind of same pattern for each of these keywords can can uncover some really great opportunities too.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just looking at it and it's really interesting. And what I'm of course curious about, given your experience and all the data you're looking at, is some insights for how the search ranking works in the Shopify app store, because of course it's a black box like on any search engine, but there are clearly ranking signals that are important, because if keywords are so important, what you want if you have an app is rank highly. Is there any, or what's your take on what's the most important ranking signal on the Shopify app store and what other factors are important?
The great thing with the algorithm, the ranking algorithm for the Shopify app store, is it's not terribly complex. The all apps category gives you very good insight of where you're going to rank. So for example, if you, let's say all things considered, you use the same keywords and you have exactly the same app listing as another competitor app, if you rank higher in the all apps category, you'll also rank higher for that keyword. And what that means is the ranking signals are the same as we discussed earlier on the call, of your review velocity, rating, the installs, and other factors which are less unclear, but I think there's maybe some kind of revenue aspect to that. And there is the support thing that Shopify have confirmed. And then that brings us to the keyword portion of it. If you include a keyword in your app name and your tagline, they have the most weight. So I would always recommend that you include an autocomplete suggestion, which is one of the most popular keywords on Shopify, in at least one of your app name and tagline. With that there, you're gonna have a good chance of ranking for that keyword, and that keyword's gonna have a good volume. And then the keywords matching is not as advanced as Google, in that you kind of have to be quite close to the word you want to rank for. It doesn't appear to do kind of really deep, like, semantic meaning analysis of app listings. It's a lot more basic keyword matching based things. It does some stuff around like pluralization and different forms of a keyword, but for the most part, you want to include a keyword frequently in the app listing while writing in a natural way, because the other thing you need to consider is conversion rate of the app listing. If you just stuff keywords in there, it's not good for your conversion rate. Merchants are going to see that and they're not going to install the app because it looks like some spammy thing.
Yeah.
And I've seen that pattern where kind of, especially new apps, they kind of think, okay, let's put a complete keyword in 3 or 4 times in the app name and tagline, maybe to get an initial little boost, but ultimately you kind of see that the quality of merchants they're attracting is not good, and then they get some bad reviews and it pushes them right down again. So it's a balance, but the good news is that if you try to do something around keyword optimization of your app listing, you're ahead of most app developers. Not many app developers are very switched on to app listing optimization yet.
Yeah, that's super interesting, because everyone knows about Google search optimization, right? But on these niche marketplaces, it's for some reason often neglected. And a while ago, I talked to Jan Paulsen about a WordPress ecosystem, and he told me something very similar, that a lot of plugin creators simply neglect that it's so important to rank for keywords. And it's, of course, the same in the Shopify app store. If you can figure out how to rank highly, that's worth a lot of money. And yeah, it's really, yeah, surprising that not more people take it seriously. And maybe there is an opportunity to become an expert in these ranking signals, just as it's possible for Google, and help people rank higher, which I think is also something you're doing somewhat, right, with your tool.
Yeah. I think it's easy to like overplay how complicated it is, because it's not terribly complicated. My tool makes it more efficient to understand where you're currently ranking and discover ways to optimize your app listing. And it also offers a little app listing editor that highlights where you're using the keyword. And a really nifty feature is you can see your before and after ranking. So you can put your keywords in, you can publish that app listing, and the beauty of the Shopify app store is you can see your ranking straight away. Unlike Google, where you have to wait like days even, and probably even longer to gather data, you can see your new ranking straight away. So I've built the app listing editor in App Store Analytics around that concept. So you can play with keywords. You can take keywords out, put keywords in, and all the time see if you start ranking higher for some keywords and if you start ranking lower for others, and really tune it in real time. And then you wait and you see over the space of maybe a few weeks to see how your visibility has improved in the App Store. So yeah, that's what I'm doing with App Store Analytics. And what's interesting is it's something that a lot of app developers are kind of curious about, but not many have experimented with it yet. And those that have, you can really see they've got the traction. They've got an edge on the competitors. A lot of folks kind of write their app listing copy because it sounds good or it fits their brand. Both like great reasons to do it, but they completely ignore keyword optimization. As a side here on the subject of opportunities, there are certainly areas of the App Store which like keyword optimization is pretty non-existent. The app developers have just put an app out there and they've never optimized it for keywords. So if you can come in and you can optimize for keywords and you can start ranking high in that category or under those keywords, that's a great opportunity as well.
Yeah. Is there any example that comes immediately to mind when you mentioned this category where people have not maxed out what's possible with keyword optimization?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of like kind of utility style apps, unsurprisingly, the marketing apps are pretty good at like listing optimizations. But when you get kind of into the less sexy, the categories around finance and like safety and security and those kind of areas, if you browse around those categories, you'll be kind of, they'll jump out at you that they've just called their app their brand name and their tagline is just three keywords, for example. I would jump into those kind of drier categories and see if you can kind of add some marketing pizzazz if that is your strong point, because that's what I would do if I was like a marketing wizard and I was looking to kind of break out of my marketing niche on the App Store.
Yeah. And we should mention that the domain is appstoreanalytics.io, right? That's your tool. And yeah, you describe it at Google Search Console for Shopify apps. It looks really cool, really useful. And something I was just wondering about, and there is no way to quantify the volume certain keywords get on the Shopify store, right?
No, not directly. I'm working on something that will give more insights into that. The kind of the best data we have are these autocomplete suggestions, and you can infer volume if you look at each of those keyword suggestions and who's ranking for them and the popularity of that app. So I think there's a way to do it that's better than just considering that every autocomplete suggestion is super popular, or using another tool like SEMrush or something like that. So I'm working on something in that space because I think it's super interesting to uncover these niches. The other thing that's worth mentioning here is that ads has given a lot more visibility into the keyword search volume and competitiveness. So as Shopify launched App Store ads a little while ago, and it's a row of up to three spots right at the top of an organic listing results page for a keyword search, and developers can bid on a placement there. And within the Shopify partner admin, when you add these keywords, you get an idea of the volume and the competitiveness based on like the bid range that you're offered. You can build up your own keyword research database by experimenting with running ads on those keywords and looking at how many impressions and your click-through rate and all of this kind of data you get. So it's certainly possible to get keyword data. It's not out there in the wild at the moment, and it's something that I've been thinking a lot about, and something there's a lot of demand for both organic and paid search. So yeah, watch this space.
Yeah, this was actually what I wanted to ask next. Are there ads on the Shopify App Store? And you just told me there are, because I'm not seeing any. And I saw that it has something to do with my ad blocker, but I'm still not able, I was still not able to find one, or maybe they are very sneaky. So because I know, for example, that this is how Jungle Scout is doing it for Amazon. So the way they quantify search volume for different keywords on Amazon is that they have ads, and then you can infer from these ads how often they are seen, and then you can calculate back how often they are searched for. But of course, another very easy way to get a first idea for how popular keywords are is just to get a Google search volume data, because I'm pretty sure there's a correlation, right? If people search on Google for Shopify app, I don't know, spinning wheel 10,000 times each month on Google, then yeah, there will be a coefficient, a fraction of that will be searching for the same term on the Shopify app store, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting because there is, it's if you, for example, use the AdWords tool to try and get that data, it's not so great. But if you just use Google organic search, or it's not really Google organic search, is it just Google search, and look at how many results there are, maybe to see what the autocomplete suggestions are, that's pretty good. That's, as you say, like search Shopify app space, then you'll get some suggestions, and then you can niche it down a bit as well and look for backups, security, all that kind of stuff. So you can get some stuff pop up there. And then on the Shopify app store ads, they're only at the moment under the keyword search. So if you search for something like pop-ups, for example, you should see three at the top. Maybe your ad blocker is so good that it removes that row and it has a little ad pill on those first three results there, which are paid slots. It doesn't appear on mobile. They haven't started running them on mobile yet because the conversion rate's pretty poor as it is for app installs on mobile. And you don't get them under the browsing of the app store either.
Yeah. I'm still not seeing it though. I tried it on all my browsers without ad blockers, whatever, but I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong. But interesting that they have something internally going on, and I'm not sure. Maybe it has something to do with location data or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, at the moment, you can't target based on location. It's very, very simple. You can put some filters on it, but you should be able to see it unless there's maybe some legal or policy reason why they couldn't run in your country. Yeah, cool.
Interesting. So another framework that you mentioned and that you find interesting when it comes to opportunities related to Shopify is buying versus building, right? And I'm seeing lots of energy in that space. Lots of people, at least I'm following on Twitter, are interested in buying Shopify apps. And very often when I hear the news that someone acquired a business, it's a Shopify app. So I'm of course not representative. It's just my small bubble, but it seems to be a popular space, right? And I would love to hear your thoughts, why you think this is so popular, but also makes a lot of sense for all involved parties.
It's super hot. Like if I was an acquirer, I'd be a bit concerned at the moment if I was looking to acquire something for under 100 grand, definitely, and probably for a few hundred grand. I think the multiples are going through the roof here. It's a friend just sold for 8x, which in my mind doesn't really make a lot of sense for like a financial acquisition. But what we're seeing is people are buying them for like a learning experience. If you have a choice to like start from zero and write the first line of code and try and find an opportunity and launch it and go through all of that, you can shortcut it perhaps by acquiring an app that already has a couple hundred dollars recurring revenue. Like, it's not much validation, but it's a little bit of validation. And you also have probably a lot of learning in terms of data if the app's been out there running for like a year or more. So that's what I see at that part of the market, is I see valuations getting quite high because people are using it as like an education. And if I had like to buy something or to like buy a course, I'd definitely lean towards like buying an app that's been out in the market, and I could learn maybe even also from the founder of that app who could give me some insights. So that's an interesting part of it. And I think like going up from that range, going to slightly larger apps, maybe apps with 5 to 10K MRR, they are also fairly expensive, but you start to kind of, in some ways, get down to more sensible valuations. And then once you break a million and go higher than that, then you exclude a lot of people from the market who are kind of just looking for the education thing, or they heard that Shopify was hot and they want to buy this little thing on the side. You get more into the preserve of like private equity or exit founders, or maybe even right to talk to some strategic buyers. So it's a very interesting market at the moment. I can see a lot of M&A activity around Shopify apps, and I think it makes complete sense in a lot of ways, because you skip that 0 to 1 piece and you eliminate some risk by putting some cash down.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And a while ago, Kevin also mentioned that when I've talked to him here for the podcast, that instead of wasting a lot of money on these incubators, startup incubators, smaller countries should just buy established businesses for people and let it operate, because you're learning a lot more than either by these courses or whatever else incubators are offering. I think makes a lot of sense. And also Shampuri did this mini SPAC where they offered to buy a business and give it to an operator for him to learn. And they actually ended up buying a Shopify app too, right? which is kind of funny. And it somewhat got out of control. So it started with just buy a cheap app for 5K and give it to someone to learn. And so many people jumped in that it ended up with, I think, 100K. And
nice.
Yeah, Daniel Scott Mitchell, I think, is the name of the guy who ended up as a lucky winner. And the guy, they handed it over for him to learn. And they bought an app called Sold Stock Inventory Counter. Create urgency by sharing sales and remaining stock. Yeah,
I love the concept. I think it's, I'm someone who learns by making some mistakes, and kind of, maybe it's not the most efficient way always, but I'd much prefer that to kind of theoretically building this kind of Shopify app in a vacuum and not experiencing the market and talking to merchants and stuff. That was some of the most interesting stuff for me as a Shopify app developer, was trying things, failing, learning a lot, talking to merchants. That's super interesting to me. I personally wouldn't be a great student to go through one of these accelerators or online training courses. I mean, I think there's a place for them. And I love the concept of kind of if these like training programs or incubators had apps that they were operating, and maybe they're kind of like projects for students. So I think that would be a really cool concept where the students kind of like play around with the app, but it's still a real app and it has real merchants on it. Yeah, that's a great way to learn and a great way to get real experience rather than just reading a book.
Yeah. So the last thing you had on the list when it comes to opportunities, which might be even the most actionable, is under-optimized popular apps. Because you also sent me a nice Airtable with lots of data. And there's a lot to learn, but just by looking at the different rankings, but not just the rankings in the App Store, but of course also how they are changing. And one of these standard frameworks, I would call, is of course looking at popular apps with bad ratings, right? Where maybe they got a bit lazy over time or whatever. Yeah, you call it fat and lazy. They neglected the support, features are falling behind, and there are no better ways of doing what they do on the platform. And that's something to look at. And yeah, I really like the data you shared. That's also, I think, a total gold mine, because you've been tracking the App Store for quite a while, right?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to crawl the App Store daily and to gather insights on how it's shifting as well. I mean, there's a lot to learn from who's moving and who's not moving, and how all of these different signals are playing out over time. And I mean, that's something you can see. Like, there are kind of incumbents that sit there. They're not really doing much. They're kind of trundling along. Yeah, I would say fat and lazy is a good way to describe them, because they're doing fine. It's supporting maybe one developer, maybe a small team. It's making enough money. There isn't maybe a lot of ambition to grow it substantially. Like, as a competitor, I see that as a big opportunity, because as we talked about earlier in the call, things don't stay static. Like, there may be better ways of doing what the app's doing using the APIs now. Maybe Shopify platforms changed. Maybe there are features that used to work, but they aren't so effective anymore due to like privacy restrictions. All of these things kind of you can see by looking at their momentum in the App Store, how their rating is trending. So the data that's built up over time is extremely valuable for like honing in on these different scenarios that we've been talking about. And this under-optimized popular app is really interesting for me, just because I kind of like the underdog story as well, where you can take part of the market from this app with like 10,000 reviews or something, and just because they've lost that spark of innovation, like the whole innovator's dilemma kind of scenario is played out, and it's played out in a small way on Shopify now that it's been out as a platform for over 10 years.
Yeah, totally. And you have some super interesting indicators here in your database on top of that, though. Of course, popular but bad rating is one. Then the top movers, right, in both directions are super interesting. Where are changes happening? And there is usually related opportunities. And you also have two other things in there. One is acquired apps that you're tracking, right? Where you're tracking where the partner name changed.
Yeah, this was interesting. Because I think what prompted this was like a friend of mine said to me, "Oh, we just acquired this Shopify app, and they are an established Shopify app developer themselves." So I thought, where like they didn't put out a press release, they didn't like send an email to all their customers. It happened super super quietly. Like no one said anything about it. I wouldn't have known if my friend hadn't mentioned this to me. So yeah, I was really interested to see like how possibly could we track when this happens, just to see kind of what's being bought and who's buying. So the partner name is probably the best we can do here, because what normally happens is an app will get transferred from one partner account to another partner account, and then that'll change the partner name. You do also have people changing their partner name, maybe if they've changed the legal entity that they're operating from, but you can filter those out fairly reliably as well. So yeah, with this change in partner name, we can see that there are certain app developers who are very quiet about what they're doing, but they are actually acquiring like an app every few months to build out their what's the word for it? They're like their foothold in the App Store, or their footprint, just to kind of acquire merchants and to feed into maybe their core apps. And then you've got kind of new mini PE firms coming in and like buying incumbents that have been around for a while. And you've got like big players like Intuit who've bought things like TradeGecko. Yeah, really interesting stuff there. I mean, you can spend a lot of time kind of reverse engineering why they made the acquisition, what potentially it was in made it interesting for them. Everyone has their own reasons, but I think having some insight into the M&A activity on Shopify is valuable for a lot of folks.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of like learning from the best investors by tracking their stock portfolio. So here you're looking at people who are investing in Shopify apps, and you can track their movements, right? And that's super valuable data. I totally agree. And that's a lot to learn. And also, of course, smaller opportunities related to it. Because, for example, if you notice that an app gets acquired, and you are running, I don't know, a marketing agency, a keyword optimization agency, whatever, you can, these changes are interesting because then you can reach out and say, hey, now might be a good point in time to work with us. We can help you, especially if you notice that this is a company who just bought their first Shopify app. Yeah, they might be interested in anyone who can help them. So of course, a smaller related opportunity, but still interesting. And the last thing is that you also track banned apps, which I think is also super fascinating.
Yeah, it's Shopify hasn't been, I think for the first time they put out a list of the apps they banned on a forum post. It was probably at the end of last month. That was really interesting. So I spent some time digging into like, I was just naturally curious why. What were they doing that got them banned? And you can see that quite often. It's pretty obvious from looking at like review trends that they're completely unnatural and they've bought a bunch of reviews. You can also see that they've maybe fallen foul of policies with regard to the app listing, disallowed formatting or various other things that they're not allowed to include. In terms of opportunities, like I heard some people say that maybe there's an opportunity to like build an app that was what the Band app was doing. Like that's less clear in my mind, I think. Maybe you can, I mean, most of them aren't very popular. That's something that I should also say with the Band apps. They've kind of left the app store in the early days when they've been trying to get that initial traction and been doing super shady things. But I don't think I have it in my Band apps tab, but you can also see kind of depublished apps. They're pretty interesting because they haven't necessarily been banned, but the developer's taken a decision to pull them out of the App Store. And sometimes that's due to a Shopify platform change that they haven't wanted to update their app for. The subscription app API change is a good example. Some apps got depublished and they never went back in, even though they had okay traction. That's an interesting opportunity because maybe it's a few K revenue, which isn't enough for that developer to make those API changes. But for someone new coming in, they can see the depublished app and they can build the same thing themselves on the new API and they know that there's some traction there, or even acquire those depublished apps and update them so that they're in line with the policies. Yeah, it's the Shopify App Store it's lively and there's stuff changing all the time. And it's when's the best time to get into it? It's now, without a doubt. Like the Shopify's growth has been great in the last year. The partner ecosystem's been growing fantastically. It's continuing its growth. It's still, as Toby says, like in the larger e-commerce world, like Shopify is still small. There's still a massive opportunity there. And in terms of the App Store, it's crowded in some areas, but if you're smart and you have a good strategy to search out these opportunities, there's lots there, there's lots of gold.
Yeah, totally. And the time is unfortunately over, I think, but is there any way people can get access to this data you're collecting?
Good question. I know you're the master of this area, so we should definitely talk to see if it's something we can do to unearth it for folks.
Awesome. So last but not least, where can people find your stuff? We already mentioned AppStoreAnalytics.io. That's your main project, but you're also on Twitter, right?
Yeah, on Twitter is drsim, S-I-M, also danielrsim.com.
That's your personal website, yeah. So thank you so much for taking the time. This was really amazing.
Thanks, Apple, for speaking for chat.